Hello and welcome to episode number 198 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S-E-A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S-E-A.
And welcome to 1998 4. The second time, as we remember some years, we have Mrs. Fantasy Genius joining us.
Hello.
It took 196 episodes, and now 2 and 3.
Wow. So,
a regular now.
Basically, yes.
We're going to get to that in a second. First, in order of business, you may have noted that episode 198 means we are close to a milestone number.
Really?
The number is 206.
Oh, hello.
We have a very special podcast. I haven't figured out what we're going to do. But no, the 200th episode, we're going to have
a very special, fabulous Peltoncast. We're finally going to confront hard-hitting issues.
After school special, hopefully. as we did for the 100th episode, we're going to do a clip show of the best of the past 100 episodes of the Fabulous Peltoncast.
Wow.
So please send us your choices, your favorite segments or interviews or episodes, not probably entire episodes, of the last 100. And I look forward to Ben B being the only one who has any of these.
So this implies that there were good segments in the last 197 episodes.
Less bad segments.
Okay.
Yeah. So either hit us up with those either at Peltoncast on Twitter or peltoncast@gmail.com. And I'll be putting that together at some point soon here.
Responses over there.
I want to email peltoncast@gmail.com.
I mean, everybody wants to email peltoncast@gmail.com.
Next time y'all aren't answering my texts, guess what?
I mean, only
I don't have access to it.
He's not going to do you.
He'll respond to your text.
That's
for
true.
Sure.
That's true. He does.
Like Y2K, which we'll be talking about in a couple of weeks, will the Peltoncast destroy itself after the 200th episode?
Hopefully not.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see.
I guess so. It's always touch and go with this podcast. Should we get to what we're drinking here on episode 198? Because it's a seasonal theme here.
Well, as we are recording this, it is Mardi Gras.
It's Fat Tuesday.
Which is also Mardi Gras. Yeah.
Happy Mardi Gras to both of you.
Happy Mardi Gras to you as well.
Happy Mardi Gras. Do you need a baby? Small plastic one.
I'm going to drop one in my San Juan seltzer over there.
And whoever gets it.
This year for Lent, I feel like we're giving up bad podcasting.
So we're not going to podcast during Lent?
After the 200th episode, we're going away.
This is a double dad joke right there.
From our good friends at Abita Brewing Company in New Orleans, Louisiana, is the Mardi Gras Bock.
The Abita Mardi Gras Bock is brewed with pale Pilsner and caramel malts and German pearl hops. Our Bock is similar to German Maibock's, with its rich malt flavor and full body. Mardi Gras Bock brings the fun of carnival season to you wherever you are. I don't know if it quite translates. If, like, it was in Chicago a couple weeks ago, which, you know, like, would have been during this celebration, and it was, like, 1 degree.
Well, they consider it Punschki Day in Chicago.
That's true. It's a very different holiday there. All right, well, a toast to Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
We're also toasting this week to Marshawn Lynch, current Seahawks running back, technically, and possibly future. The door was not closed by John Schneider and Pete Carroll.
The once in future running back?
Yes. On his role in this season of Westworld.
There we go.
Which I think maybe had previously been announced, but nobody realized until he was in the trailer that dropped earlier this week. And
you
everyone
knew it
was like,
coming.
Hey, is that Marshawn Lynch? And the answer is yes, that is Marshawn Lynch.
Of all the TV shows for Marshawn Lynch to be in, this is the exact one that I would have predicted.
I mean, he's been in TV shows before. The League, notably. There was at least one other one.
I've heard many describe who have screeners of the show of it as a powerhouse performance, potentially Emmy winning.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
on a more...
I'm having a lot of conversations with people who have screeners of Westworld, and you're specifically judging
Marshall Lynch's performance. I assume that you had just seen someone say that on the internet, and it, we're citing it as if it was someone you know.
Many people are saying.
On a more somber note this week, we pour some out for former Husky and Seahawks defensive back Nesby Glasgow, who died Tuesday at age 62 after battling stomach cancer. Glasgow was inducted to the UW Athletic Hall of Fame in 2001 and played 5 seasons for the Seahawks during his NFL career. All right, transitioning into the weekly business, let's start with wrapping up Seattle Burger Month at Lil Woody's. And check out what I've got.
Oh, God, you're so smug about this.
Yes.
Oh,
that's a nice looking beauty.
It, well, of course.
Whoa. It's darker than the one that was in the Instagram photo.
I mean, it is the one that was in the Instagram
photo.
The one that I posted?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the same
one.
It's
the same one.
I didn't use like a...
He didn't take a stock photo.
Well, maybe you did some nice photo editing because that looks pretty crisp in person.
It was well lit in the window of the Lil Woody's.
I like it.
It's jet black.
It's jet black.
The good people at Midnight Supply Company do their printing, and they do an excellent job. They also, fun fact, made the Pelton Cast hats.
Ooh.
Yeah. Which we know, and every listener who has one knows they are high quality.
Absolutely.
Mailed out by me.
Frequently so. This week's burger was actually not technically a burger. Not a burger.
Whoa!
The Manolin sandwich from Elizabeth Kenyon of Manolin. The ingredients here... Ahi amarillo aioli, pickled red onions, chimichurri, sliced radishes, breaded pork tenderloin cutlet on a sesame-seeded bun.
Now, how many of these ingredients did you not get or take off of?
None.
Wow, you ate the radishes?
Yeah.
Look at you, grown.
Radishes they did not detract in any way. This was... So... If I look back on the 4 weeks of Seattle Burger Month, as we all reflect on Seattle Burger Month after completing it, I'm very curious to get the Third Pelton brother, Nate Taggart's ranking, since he did all four of these as well. I might put this slightly ahead of the Good Old Burger, because the Good Old Burger was, as it states, really good, but also
kind of
just a burger.
Yeah.
Like a really good burger. Again, very similar in concept to what we did as the Pelton Cast burger at Lil Woody's, but kind of, you know, not out of the ordinary. A pork cutlet sandwich with chimichurri on it and like all the different flavors that were involved with the pickled red onions and the aioli.
Wait, I thought there was seared ahi on this.
No, that's the ahi is part of the aioli.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it was really quite good.
Okay, so let's get your Burger Month rankings.
So I would go with that one A, I'm going to say, was the Good Old Burger. Number three, I thought, was the Homer Sapien. And then number four was the Boricua Burger. So, but all quality offerings this time.
Number five was your pronunciation of Boricua the first time.
I don't want to talk about it.
That's what Mrs. Fantasy Genius is good to be here
Wait,
for.
Wait, oh, by the way, what year was that? This may transition because I only
Big
realized
fun!
After...
You didn't?
No, I had no idea.
Oh my God.
Yep.
So that's what they're saying
that's
in the song,
saying.
Boricua?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't it shocking?
Holy shit. Wow.
Still don't know how to pronounce it, but you're still a hater. That was, in fact, March 28th, 1998. There
wow.
we go. Tying everything together.
This is the one situation that want to be a player and Lil Woody's burger are naturally linked to each other.
Naturally.
Oh my God.
Whew. So I would, today was the...
I had never
you
heard.
You did not know this?
I had never heard this term before you said it.
It's but like you sure had, because I know that you listened to that song.
I mean, I've definitely heard the song. I didn't know what they were singing. There's so many words and songs I
like
don't know.
Like little brown hairs everywhere. You nasty.
Yeah, that part of it. That part of it we
that
understood.
Stuck,
that was in English.
But the rest in.
And even though I was in Spanish class in 1998, the term Boricua never came up, sadly. So you do have the rest of the week to get the...
What was your name in Spanish class?
Jorge.
Oh, okay. What was yours?
I was a big fan of Jorge Fabregas and Jorge Posada.
If your name was Manolin, that'll really link it back to Lil Woody's.
Me?
Yeah.
No, I was Catalina.
So you still have the rest of the week to go pick up the Manolin sandwich and complete Seattle Burger Month. Would recommend that. It's been a great Seattle Burger Month.
And again, I mean, you can't go back in time and get the previous three burgers at this point. But I do have to say, if anybody is thinking about doing Seattle Burger Month next year, Lil Winnie's really gives out high quality stuff for doing it.
They do.
Like, it is at a tier so far above. This is not like giveaway at a basketball game level stuff that they give out.
I mean, there are some good giveaways at basketball games, but yes, it's a higher quality than that.
So I'm always impressed. I mean, the burger hat is like...
It's our most stolen by children hat in the house.
Yeah.
Over the Pelton Gas hat?
Oh, by far.
It doesn't have a burger on it.
It does have a burger on
it. It's true. I feel in some ways like it's almost an unofficial Pelton Cast hat given the start of our searches with burgers. Okay, so let's now fully transition. Let's remember some years, and specifically 1998. You want to start us off?
Not really.
Okay, well, so 1998, to me, when I was thinking back on it, I was just like, I don't remember anything about 1998.
Such right? a bizarre thing.
We're like, I mean, I said this to you earlier, was like the mid-90s I remember super well. And then the late 90s, I'm like, it all kind of felt like a blur. Look, I was a grown-up at that point.
Oh, yeah, 13? 12 at the start of the year.
At 13 years old. I think I was in 8th grade, right?
Yes.
No, I think you were in 7th grade.
No, you were in 8th grade because I was in 9th grade.
Well, I guess, yeah.
I was in 8th/9th grade. No.
Right. Nope.
7/8th grade. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it was just like, I feel like when you're in middle school, you're just trying to get through the day, right? Like, you don't think about anything else. You're just like, can I get through this day without dying it at Chinook Middle School?
Or getting flushed down a toilet.
Or just getting made fun of.
Yeah, yeah, anybody looking at you. Yeah. Looking at you, saying anything about you, pushing you. I definitely got pushed over one time in 8th grade.
Well, if middle school was rough.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm starting this. I was just like, I don't really remember anything about 8th grade. But then started diving in a little bit more to exactly like you think in the macro of like, what do I generally remember about these years? And it's like, nothing stands out. There's no 98 Mariners or whatever. I mean, there were 98 Mariners, but nobody cared. Right.
We'll talk about something with the 98 Mariners,
but there weren't that notable sports moments. There wasn't an Olympics to tie it to. It was kind of just a year in a lot of ways.
Technically there was a Winter Olympics.
Nobody cares about Winter Olympics.
Agree.
And Nagano. Sorry. Was it Nagano? Osaka?
I do not know that.
There was no Osaka Olympics. <Tell you that. laughs>
Was this the Salt Lake City one? Was that 2002?
No, I think that was 2002. It was Nagano, yeah. Nagano.
You're welcome. But then, so diving into it on a more specific level, we talked last week with Chris where it was like, that was when our NBA careers ended. And... as the start of 7th grade by not even trying to be on the basketball team at Chinook Middle School. Both of our NBA careers ended in that moment. 8th grade came around and I'm like, well, I got to do something with my life, right?
Now that you're not going to be in the NBA?
I need a future. And I think 98 was when I determined that I was going to be a stand-up comedian.
How's that coming?
Look, I've got a podcast, and so does every stand-up comedian. So
that's a fair point. I mean, in some ways, we're doing jokes on stages occasionally at live shows.
Yeah, jokes.
All the jokes. So for me, it was a little bit different because I had a little bit of a unconventional schooling situation, and I ended up entering 9th grade that year. So the 97-98 year was my very first year of high school. It was a big change, big
shock. Also a tough adjustment.
Tough adjustment, yeah, for sure. But the things that stand out to me the most when you mentioned 1998 and asked what I can remember was Gap khakis.
That.
So I was starting at a brand new school, large and frightening school, in my opinion. Super preppy school. I don't want to mention the school, though I know some of y'all know this. That I've talked to you about this
home
before.
Of Matisse Thybulle.
Yeah. I was from Renton. I was very much out of place. I was there on academic scholarship. Yes, I know. And everybody else was wearing like Abercrombie and Fitch, which I didn't really even know what that was.
Wow. Now and we need to look up what your LFO then, happened.
Right. I know. After I way after that. Went to the mall, realized there was no way in hell that was happening. Could not afford that. So next thing I was like, wait, there are these ads on TV with people swing dancing and they're wearing Gap khakis. And I was like, that's pretty goddamn close. So I went and I saved up all my lunch money and I bought myself a pair of Gap khakis, just one pair.
You personally went and bought your own Gap khakis?
Yeah, I had no money.
Wow.
Like I was just, no. Yeah, that's what I had to do to make it work. So
Summer Girls, sadly, was
much later.
Summer of 1999.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, 1 year later. So got my one pair of Gap khakis. I had my white on white Nikes. And that was my uniform. Pretty much I would shift out the shirt occasionally.
What about a K-Swiss? Was that, I feel like.
I had a pair of K-Swiss as well. Yes, they're fantastic. And I would write things in the white stripes on the sides.
Of the K-Swiss?
Yes.
Jan would never let us get anything like that.
Oh, get anything or write anything?
No, get anything. We were never allowed to have anything so fashionable.
Yeah, that's why I had to buy it myself. But made it work.
I was thinking, by the way, we didn't talk about this back at the time. The one like cool thing I was allowed to have as a kid, kamikazes.
What's that? I don't even know what that is.
Sean Kemp shoes.
Oh, see, that's
in like 1996.
Wow.
I didn't get any.
Yeah.
Hand me down.
You missed out. You got the Allen Iverson jersey, I guess, instead.
Yeah, I've heard about that one. That's a good, you actually still have that here. So anyways, yes. And I remember debuting those fine khakis. At my very first high school dance. Twinter.
I wore khakis too. This was so much later. It was not appropriate. But I definitely well, went
first
to.
Off, just respect Jim Harbaugh's existence.
We called it Grub Tolo.
Yeah. Yeah. Ours was.
Were you dressed like?
Twinter.
Twinter.
Because, you know, you got to combine Twin Tolo.
I mean, it.
It was the beginning
it
of winter.
Out.
It was still 90. It wasn't quite winter. So winter, you know.
Uh-huh.
Wore the khakis. We had a DJ that year, I remember, in the cafeteria from Cube 93. And
whoa.
I was like shocked because I'd
wait,
been to
wait,
some.
Which do you remember which one from?
Not like one of the like, you know, but like, you know, where they could rent out.
Pretty Little Ricky?
It wasn't. I wish it was. It was one of those
you know,
ones you could rent
out.
This
was way before Super Sam. Super Sam was probably
that
yeah.
was the
high
first
school.
One I had. But I went to high school with his younger brother, Pretty
oh.
Little Ricky.
Oh,
well, it could have. I mean, it could have been.
Littler Ricky.
Nah, it was.
Ricky-no.
It was some white guy. I don't know. Like,
I mean, this guy was white.
It could have been Pretty Little Ricky. I don't know. I didn't talk to
Little Ricky. I haven't thought about that in probably 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. But yes, yeah, so had a DJ. Because I'd been to a couple of dances in my middle school career, but it was all religious dances. I am not personally religious, but that's the only organizations holding dances for people younger than the high school set.
But at that point, like the middle school dances were always like the boys stand on one side and the girls stand on the other side and never the twain shall meet. Like it was very different than high school dances.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah, they were more like right after school, they would send the people to the gym, to the cafetorium or whatever, and then you would sort of stand around awkwardly.
That sounds correct. I did not go to conventional middle school. Never went to a regular middle school dance, but I did go to the Catholic parish dances, so my friends would take me to those, and then occasionally got invited to the Mormon dances, but they didn't ever tell me they were the Mormon dances until after we got there, and then it was like, womp womp.
Traditional Mormon fashion.
First real live high school dance. 93, there was like a disco ball situation happening. It was dark. Like the cafeteria was trans fucking formed. It was completely different. There was like an outdoor area that would be equivalent to like nowadays, or I guess not nowadays, but like where people used to smoke at a bar, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, people were out there like, you know, chilling.
The patio.
Like, the patio. Yeah. I was like, oh, this is so fancy. And then so people are in there bumping and grinding.
Uh-huh.
Mostly to Next.
Oh, wow.
Too close. And finally, I realized what that was all about, that dance. I was like, oh, my goodness. I don't think I wanted to know this or have this happening to me.
You never want
to
know that.
But the good thing about going to a Catholic high school is Sister Sarah.
Uh-huh.
Kind of good. Kind of interesting. Sister Sarah was a real live nun. Don't know what she's up to now. If she's still with us. Hopefully she is. Bless her soul, either way. She literally had a 6-inch ruler, wooden ruler, would come around and stick it in between the genitals of the dancers. Not joking.
Would you say leave room for the Holy Ghost?
No, because you couldn't hear anything over that Pretty Little Ricky
over
happening.
Next,
the bass was too strong.
Too strong. So it was just, you would be dancing your heart's desire out, and then you would feel this wooden poke. Not that kind of poke. Different kind of poke coming through.
I mean, that is too close.
And it was Sister Sarah. Short little nun in her habit, sticking the ruler in. And so
Catholics really are consumed by genitals.
Oh, so consumed. So we thought we'd figure this out. One of my friend Katrina and I, and we were like, we'll dance with each other then. That way, she's not going to care about that. Little did we know.
Yeah.
Didn't care. Didn't care what type of genitals we're touching. It was not okay. I mean, then we also tried the option
might especially
of
especially care.
Yeah. We didn't even think of it that way, but then we're like, oh yeah, I guess so. Tried the other way of turning around. So there was no genital to genital contact, you know, back to front situation dancing. Didn't realize the implications of that either, but the ruler definitely came up for that. So that was my first high school.
So there was experience. You didn't discover a sneak with the ruler?
No, we tried.
There was no sneak.
There was no sneak. And I remember if you got like poked with the ruler 3 times, you were out. You're just done.
Kicked out of the dance completely?
Yeah. Your canned food. You didn't get to take your canned food item home. Like, you were done. No refund. You're done. Get to
take your Sister food. Sarah was keeping track of how many strikes were on every person.
That's her only job. I mean, that's what she was doing.
But there's got to be like a couple hundred kids, right?
No, I mean, probably. That was what she was doing, though.
It's more of a feeling.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah. Agreed.
I don't know if you can the Holy Ghost struck Sister Sarah.
Yeah. She's the one that taught me about heavy petting. I remember this. I had to take a religion class in that same year, 1998.
And this came up?
Oh, yes. We were sitting there one day, like, you know, you were learning a little bit about the Bible, a little bit about, you know, world religions. And then one day she's like, I need to talk to you all about heavy petting. And we're like, what the fuck is that? And then we had to listen to this little tiny old nun describing...
Wow.
Heavy petting. And I just remember, like, my face just burned. I can't believe this is happening. But I'll never forget that phrase, heavy petting.
Our 1998s were very different.
Yes.
So about the 1998 Mariners.
Right. Send that back to the sports realm.
Should I go with that?
Yeah. Well, I guess I do feel like fashion, there was something about, we talked about sort of like the quote-unquote preppy look, where I think things really came together in 98. I just Googled 1998 in fashion, and the thing that came up from the fine people at Quora.com were many of the trends from 1998 were flannel shirts and plaid tops.
Yeah, flannel shirts open over like a white t-shirt.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you want to look at this photo?
I was a little behind.
Right there. Of the flannel shirt open over the white t-shirt. Large chains hanging down. Definitely a cross in there to appease Sister Sarah.
Is that a Lawrence brother?
Yes.
Some jeans and then like a shirt tied around your waist that you'll definitely never wear.
Because you're already wearing a shirt.
It's that one's tied there just for fashion.
Yeah.
I was behind, so I don't think I got to that look until like 2000. So the 1998 Mariners. It's weird because like it was all the same players from 97 basically, but they weren't any good. I mean, I guess, well, they were okay. They weren't as good as they finished third in the AL West. Now, part of the problem was that Randy Johnson went 9 of 10 with a 4.33 ERA.
Was it the year they traded him?
It was the year that they traded him.
He wanted to be gone, right?
It was part of that was luck, as it turns out, now that we have like advanced baseball statistics. His fielding independent pitching rating was not like that dramatically worse than it was.
Let me just say, us 13-year-olds had no idea what FIP was.
That far away, like 2000 was when I got into sabermetrics. So he had some bad luck.
When did you get into sabermetrics?
Not on the 1998 East Side Catholic softball team. Certainly,
nobody was walking.
JV had not make varsity.
So then the Mariners trade him at the deadline. to the Houston Astros. By the way, one of my defining 1998 memories, I'm curious whether you remember this as well. There was a Letterman top 10 list shortly after this trade that was like top 10 euphemisms. And one of them was trading the big unit to Houston.
I definitely remember this. Yeah. This was an important moment, me as a young comedian.
aspiring comedian.
Dave Letterman top 10 lists were a huge part of that.
Every morning, I listened to them on the way to school.
As read on Cube 93? Or
yeah.
They would read the top 10 list from the day before the T-Man was doing this?
I think so. I mean, I had to leave for school at 7, so it was super, super early.
They
I
had like 4 hours of content to fill.
T-Man, man. what a good times. Do you recall who the Mariners got for Randy Johnson from the Houston Astros in this trade that we all thought was terrible?
I mean, do you want to guess? Because I know all of them, I think.
Oh, I don't remember them. I don't remember.
So there was John Halama.
Correct. Who was a player to be named later, I believe, when the trade was actually consummated.
Freddie Garcia.
Yep.
And then Carlos Guillen.
Yep.
Was there anybody else? Did Rob Ducey go to Houston with him? Or am I just trying to bring up Rob Ducey again?
I think you're just trying to bring up Rob Ducey. Now, that was the entire trade. Halama was not dealt to the Mariners until October 1st.
But basically, all three of those players became, like, two of them were all-stars, right? And then Halama was at least a professional baseball player.
I didn't realize Carlos Guillen was a three-time all-star. That's more than I would have guessed. Yeah, and I mean, Guillen and Garcia were in the minors, had never played in the majors, so, like, you had no idea who they really were. But then Garcia, like, either the next season or the year after, like, immediately became a really solid pitcher for the Mariners and was for several years there.
I mean, there's...
He won 17 games.
We don't need to relitigate the Randy Johnson trade from 18 or 12 years ago. No, sorry, 22 years ago.
Yeah, I was like,
kill me. But even in the end, Randy Johnson still was like one of the best pitchers in baseball for like a decade after that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it would have been better if the Mariners had re-signed him. But once it got to the point where he wasn't coming back, it was a good outcome. After Randy Johnson went to the Houston Astros, he went 10-1 with a 1.28 ERA the remainder of the season.
I think we all knew what was happening. We understand what it's like playing for the Houston Astros now.
They were begging him to tell him what pitches he was throwing? I'm not following.
They would beg to confuse the other teams. Wait, I hadn't thought about that.
That it was only helped their hitting?
Yeah, because they're pitchers who people are like, well, pitchers seem to get really good when they go to Houston. And it's like, oh, wait, this doesn't actually help the pitchers.
Yeah, this thing is so, this is 2020, but everyone has an incentive to lie about this. Like, all the other teams should be like, oh, yeah, it's a huge advantage. You can't buy it. Like, it turns you into a superstar. Like, you should say whatever. There's no counter argument. Like, you can't prove that it wasn't.
And you can't prove that Randy Johnson wasn't cheating with the Astros after the Mariners traded him there in 1998.
It is true that you can't prove that. The 1998 Seahawks.
Happy Fat Tuesday.
We talked about this earlier on the podcast. That was the year that the famous Vinny Testaverde touchdown that he scored with his helmet that brought replay into the NFL. So that happened in week 14
was
of the season.
Was this Ricky Waters' first year?
No, I think he'd been here a few years.
He'd been around a while.
The Seahawks were 6-6 at that point. They dropped to 6-7 with a loss, won two of their final three, and finished one game out of a playoff spot behind the New England Patriots, coached by one Peter Clay Carroll. All three wild cards, there were three wild cards back then. All three of them came from the AFC East.
Wow.
and then at
there
the
were th- three wild cards then?
Yeah.
Because there were only three divisions.
Yeah.
Okay, so I remember that specifically. There was an Almost Live, which we haven't talked about in Let's Remember Some Years, and we should.
Oh, yes, we should.
what year was High Five and White Guys, all of them?
There was an Almost Live where they were like, yeah, we saw a highlight of this. And, you know, he actually did score a touchdown. And then so they show the Vinny Testaverde getting to the one. And then the most clip art ever. Arms stretching over the goal line or whatever. And it was like, this was an advanced graphic for 1998. Almost Live.
Yeah.
But that was another thing for my budding comedy career.
Have to talk about Almost Live. Okay.
Because I wasn't, like, we weren't that influenced by Saturday Night Live at that time. It was like Almost Live.
We were starting to. Like, Ferrell was on by 98, wasn't he?
Maybe it was like right at the beginning.
I just don't think it was as funny. Like at for me anyway, my developmental level, like Almost Live was like.
You needed a lot of jokes specifically about Kent.
Yeah.
Or Rent.
I mean, I was sitting there. I needed to see those trucker hats right then. Does anyone else remember from Almost Live?
The answer is yes.
Dry cleaner and phone sex line.
No, actually, I don't remember that.
By far my favorite sketch. Oh my gosh. My best friend Alex and I would recreate this whilst walking the mall, which is another thing I don't think we've discussed is, you know, walking the South Center Mall.
No, we have not discussed that.
You know you did it too, right?
Not really that much.
What?
We went to South Center a lot, but...
You didn't get dropped off at the South Center Mall to walk the mall?
We went to... When did Claim Jumper open? That was a pretty important thing for us.
Yeah.
Probably 2000, 99 or 2000.
We would go to the Nordstrom Rack with Jan sometimes.
Oh, that was way after.
But we never really walked... We weren't cool enough to walk the mall.
No.
We would go to card stores, baseball card stores.
You're not shopping. You have no money.
The original Nordstrom Rack in South Center, back in the day, there was a card store in that same complex, where, as I recently referenced to Ben Golliver on one of his podcasts...
Name dropping.
I just listened to the podcast, or I saw it on Instagram and sent him a DM about it. He was like, which... basketball card trade do you regret, or something like that,
uh-huh.
Or which trade do you regret? And I traded once a Harold Miner rookie card. I got the Harold Miner rookie card for a Michael Jordan hologram card, under the logic that Harold Miner was Baby Jordan.
This was to me,
probably.
Wow,
I don't know who else it would be.
Look at that foresight I had. I was like, overrated. Okay, so you would walk the mall and recreate this Almost Live sketch.
Correct.
And it wasn't High Five and White Guys.
I was not a white guy.
No.
It was a lady that was the dry cleaner, depending on what phone line rang in. She had two phone lines. And then she was, you know, it was at a dry cleaner's. And then if the second phone line rang in, it was a phone sex line. And she had on like a pinafore apron style situation for her dry cleaning business. She would unbutton one button when the phone sex line came in. And then she would change her voice slightly and say, like, anyway. Yeah, it was hilarious. Speaking of walking the mall, though, I went to a birthday party where the birthday party was literally just the mall. That was in 1998, too. I got invited to a birthday party, and there was this girl.
It was
and
a simpler time.
She was so cool. And I was like, oh, I got invited to Jonte's birthday party. And it was the mall.
What year do you think Baby Fantasy Genius' birthday party can be the mall?
I don't know. I hope never. But it was super cheap. We got dropped off at the mall.
Of all places.
We ate whatever we wanted in the food court. Uh-huh. Sbarro and Cinnabon is what we chose.
No love for taco time.
Wow. And then we went to the Rave clothing store, which is right by the food court, if anyone remembers this. Everything there smelled like burnt plastic when you bought it, but everything there was also under
$10. This is like pre-Forever 21.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely remember going to the Rave.
Yeah, probably with females. I don't think they had men's clothing in there. And
I might have gone there to choose out clothes for that Grub Tolo that I went to.
Oh, it could be.
I think we got it in the downstairs of, this was later, this was like 2001 or two or something. But we got it, you remember, like, maybe it's the Macy's has that like downstairs area.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
the
like,
cube at the Bond.
The cube at the Bond.
You're welcome. The cube at the Bon Marché.
We definitely got the clothes down there, down in the hole.
Yeah. Well, I was in the Rave because it was cheaper than the hole.
Uh-huh.
One time I got a faux leather jacket there and it smelled so bad. I remember sitting in ninth grade English and people being like, what is that smell? And I was like, nothing. Actually, I died inside. But not the best store to go to. So anyway, the birthday party, the mall. We each got to go in there and buy a $5 item. So we did. It was amazing. And
is there a parent with you?
No. That was the coolest thing about it.
They just sent kids around the mall?
The mall.
God.
We were at the mall. I think it was only like 2 hours or something. We got dropped off and picked up 2 hours later, and that was the birthday. I don't think I got her a present. I think I felt really guilty about this because I was like, I don't even...
How are you going to bring a present into the mall?
You can't. That's what the panic was about. I think I ended up trying to buy her like a Mrs. Fields cookie or something. But yeah, that was a good day. Birthday party at the mall was a good day. But oh, something. Oh, the other thing. Can I Sorry, I know. Sorry, listeners. We're extending the podcast again. Al can cut me out of this. Kevin can cut me out of this. But 1997, late December. So for me, 1998, winter. Because I did not attend this right when it came out. The movie Titanic.
Yeah.
Came out. That was like a seminal moment in my life. It was huge. I remember the first time I saw Titanic was also my first movie date. So it was like a friend and I went to the movies with two friends that were had penises, right? So there was no like dating happening. It was just like our parents drove us to...
You were talking about their genitals in the car.
No, genitals involved. Our parents... Well, okay. So my mom picked up all four of us together, right? The boys sat in the back seat. Well, three of us across, I suppose it must have been because, yeah. Anyway, got dropped off, went to the Titanic. No touching, no looking. Can't, you know... Straight ahead, focus on the movie, hide my tears. Good times. Very touching movie. But I do remember that the seatbelt in the back seat of my mom's car smelled like Tommy Hilfiger cologne for the next literally probably year.
Was that better or worse than the faux leather jacket smell?
Oh, better. Well, I don't know. It was intense. Does anyone else, did you all use the Tommy Hilfiger cologne?
I remember we had a thing of Adidas cologne. Do you remember that?
Oh, wow.
I had Adidas. This was something that Jan got us in the late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah. I remember being a kid being like, when you're an adult, you just wear cologne. That's what you do.
All the cologne.
Yeah, it's like... It's like, that seems normal. I'm like, how do I apply this Adidas cologne?
Wait, I just bathe my body in it, which is, I think, what happened with those two young gentlemen. Oh,
it's like
attended
Adidas
that,
cologne by Stephane Marbury.
No. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So.
I think he's a French designer.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Sure. Uday, Stephane.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We're gonna get to Starberries at some point here.
Oh yeah, we are.
Yeah,
like 2003, 2002.
Yeah, I already knew you by the time we were hunting for Starberries.
It's like 2006.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was already with the Knicks, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just shocked about your lack of hanging out at the mall, people here.
We hung out at the mall a little bit. I mean, Chris got hired at Taco Time in probably 99 or 2000.
But we would just go meet him there after work. We would not really hang out there that much.
Who are you? I mean, okay, so we all grew up very close to each other, very close in age. I swear we must have been at some of the same places at some of the same times. Like, when Tristan and I first met, we spent, I think, quite a long time trying to figure out, like, were you at that thing? I was at that thing. Like, we must have been at that thing. We had friends in common, but, like, I did not know who you were, but I felt like I knew who you were. But now I understand why. It's because you weren't at the mall.
And part of the reason why is probably we were playing video games, because the thing that happened after that Jets game is I was like, look, enough is enough. I'm so upset about the outcome of this game that I need to replay this game on Madden. So, which we didn't have at that point because we were still rocking the Super Nintendo.
We hadn't gotten the PlayStation yet.
It was immediately after this that I like was like, we need to get the PlayStation.
Wow.
And we got it for Christmas 1998.
'98 was the year we got the PlayStation?
Yeah.
Wow. It was basically like getting a PlayStation meant that it ended for like a decade of me playing any new original games that weren't sports games.
I mean, I guess GTA would be the exception.
When did GTA come out?
I played San Andreas, did not play.
Right.
Like even really Vice City, maybe a little bit, but that was on a PlayStation 2. Like the PlayStation itself, I'm pretty sure we only had sports games.
Yeah, it's probably true.
And it was just like, we're going to get college football every year. We're going to get some sort of NBA game most years. We're going to get Madden every year.
I remember when I met you, there was Madden Day. You're like, no, I can't hang out today. It's Madden Day.
It's kind of wild because I hate playing Madden now.
You're like, actually, I have to get up at 6 a.m. and go stand in a line because it's Madden Day. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy?
You didn't actually get up at 6 a.m.
No.
And stand in a line.
But I probably, at that time, had gotten Madden, like, the day it came out.
I remember you waiting in a line. And
I don't think I waited in a line.
He's not that type.
Maybe you were lying to make yourself seem cooler, but I don't know if that made you seem cooler.
I don't think that was making me seem cooler. 1998 in film.
Wait, so the Seahawks fired Dennis Erickson after the season.
Oh, wow. This was the genesis of Mike Holmgren.
And it ended up working out because they hired Mike Holmgren. We'll talk about that starting in 99, but it's safe to say a good choice. There was also a coaching change on the Sonics front.
Oh, hello.
Because 1998 was the last year of the George Karl era. Actually, a shockingly good Sonics season with Vin Baker, like, playing really well that first season and, like, singing the anthem before a game. It was, like, a real honeymoon period for the Sonics and Vin Baker. But then in the playoffs, after surviving a five-game series against, of all people, Stephon Marbury.
Oh, wow.
And the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Sonics got knocked out 4-1 by the Lakers in a series we talked about a few weeks ago that Kobe Bryant barely played in as a second-year player. Shaq pretty much dominated. And the Sonics technically did not fire George Karl. His contract was up. But I was, like, ready, very excited about the change. And then there was a lockout, and there's no more games in 1998.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I remember being, like, very angry a lot, like, in the November, December, because I didn't have that stress relief of the Sonics.
Angry a lot.
Yeah. That's my memory of 1998.
So 99 happened all in calendar year 99.
Correct.
Interesting. We're going to talk about Moochie Norris in 1999. Oh, let's remember some years. And White Chocolate. I remember those two being, like...
You link them in your mind?
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
Because the Sonics played the Kings, like, early on in that year.
They did.
And seeing White Chocolate was like, we'll get to it next year. But
can I guess on cinema? Are you moving to cinema?
Yeah, yeah. Let's hear it.
Also, the Huskies fired Jim Lambright in 98. A lot of coaches got fired.
We talked about this last week. This was a transition period for all of Seattle sports.
Except Lou Piniella.
Yeah, Lou Piniella was still around. No,
he wanted to see what we can do next game.
Tap his feet on the
ground.
Backs of his feet on the ground. But for most, it was even a transition year though for the Mariners. Like, they moved on from Randy Johnson.
They had we talked last week about, you were like, they got rid of all the stars, and I was like, it was years before Griffey and A-Rod left. I forgot that Randy Johnson had left in 98. So it really was. You were right.
When they were never. After 1997 was over, the Mariners weren't a good team again until 2001.
No, they made the playoffs in 2000. Oh. They made the ALCS in 2000.
Well, I didn't pay attention to them back then. 1998 in film. And you wanted to guess about 98 in film?
Like, I did.
Some notable films?
Without the internet.
Okay, let's see it. Let's hear it.
Well, obviously, Titanic, even though...
It came out... It did not come out in 98.
1997 late December. Come on now.
I don't think it came out in late December.
I just looked. December 19th, 1997.
Okay,
I have the internet. I'm just not using it right now. Wild Wild West? Is it?
I did stop popping up here. I think that was later.
I don't think so.
I think Wild Wild West was a little bit later.
Because there had to be like 3 years in a row of Will Smith summer blockbusters. So it's Independence Day, well, Men in Black.
And why don't you all just take a little internet look?
But yeah, we'll look up Wild Wild West. What else do you have?
I mean, that's all. That's all I got.
Oh, okay.
Well, 1999, though.
Oh, damn.
So I wonder what was the 1998 Will Smith.
You don't want to close your eyes and you don't want to miss a thing.
Oh, boy.
Armageddon.
Because 1998 was the year of the summer blockbuster. And that summer blockbuster's name is not Armageddon.
It's Deep Impact.
It's also not Deep Impact.
Oh, no.
Featuring Taya Leone. It's Godzilla. A film that I don't even know if I've ever seen this movie, but you know what I have seen? I have seen Puff Daddy and Jimmy Page playing the song Come With Me. No idea who Led Zeppelin was at the time, but it fucking slapped.
That is the single best Sonics late game song of all time, excluding nobody. Even over Sing Hallelujah. Which is a great late game song.
We had aggressive Puff Daddy, which is something that we really hadn't seen at that point. It was Puff Daddy doing his thing, which was just explicitly sampling an older song, but we didn't care because we never heard that song before.
Well, I guess 1998 was Enemy of the State for Will Smith. Mm. That one has not aged as well. And it didn't come out, and it was not a summer blockbuster either.
There was also a Wallflower song from the Godzilla soundtrack that was huge.
Was there?
I think that was like the theme to Godzilla. Like, there is like a... They had two videos that had Godzilla in it. So I didn't see the movie, but I saw those videos.
You saw the important stuff.
Maybe it was just Jacob Dylan. Oh, he covered Heroes by David Bowie.
Ah.
And that was a huge song. The soundtrack, look, not many people remember the film Godzilla, but everybody remembers these songs. They were important for it. Also, 1998 in a film, we had sort of the beginning of reality TV creeping in, and the sense of...
I mean, the real world had existed for like
but it was
5 years by
it
that
was
point.
Different. There was a bit of a fear of being watched that happened, and Truman Show hit in 1998, and that was like, we sort of, people had grown up with video most of their lives at that point. We hadn't quite reached the point of everybody having videos in their pockets like phones, but it was like all of a sudden the sort of fear of being watched and reality not being what we see it as like, this kind of naturally leads to Matrix the next year.
I suppose so. I mean, I think of it more as Jim Carrey's transition into dramatic acting.
It was also like, as far as like indie films, right? Like there was the early 90s and there was like Pulp Fiction and that generation of indie filmmakers. Late 90s, we have Rushmore.
Nice.
Comes out. Pleasantville as sort of like an indie type film. Big Lebowski.
Oh, there you go.
Which I didn't see until 2002 or whatever. But it was like, this was a huge year in film.
Yeah.
Seinfeld went off the air.
Seinfeld finale. Very controversial at the time.
I want to say Phil Hartman might have died in 98 also. Because as a burgeoning comedian, Phil Hartman was like one of my number one influences in comedy. And we haven't talked enough about The Simpsons on Remembering Some Years. But
you're
like,
going to go there before news radio?
1998, May 28th, 1998, Phil Hartman died.
Huh.
The well, and also news radio. Like Phil Hartman was the most important person to me working in comedy. And honestly, like I think The Simpsons probably was never the same after he died.
Probably true. Yeah.
And he just did so many important characters for those first whatever 10 seasons of The Simpsons. And after that, there was a huge void left. And you know, they couldn't do those characters after that. But tragic death that happened right around the same time as the Seinfeld finale.
Right. Should we go to music?
Dawson's Creek, people.
Dawson's Creek leading the gap. for the gap generation. For me, it was Boy Meets World. It was like Boy Meets World was on season 6 in 1998. Which I would have guessed it was like went into the early 2000s.
Wait, I thought Boy Meets World premiered when they were in sixth grade when I was in sixth grade, and then they graduated like 3 years ahead of me, which was very confusing because they skipped forward. I thought 93, 94 was the first year of it.
First aired September 24th, 1993.
Yeah, that's 90. So it'd be in its, I guess 98, 99 would be the sixth season.
Yes. And it went off the air May 5th, 2000.
Okay.
But Boy Meets World was already into the college years.
Yeah, before I had graduated high school. And again, we started out both.
Wow, we haven't talked about Saved by the Bell on.
I know, I was just thinking that.
Man, Saved by the Bell was definitely, I think, over by 98.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
we were still watching it on reruns.
It was Saved by the Bell was never over for us.
Exactly. Still isn't.
Really, it's kind of sad that Saved by the Bell isn't on a streaming service for you to just turn on and have in the background.
Agreed.
It is pretty perfect for that. I mean, the original ended in 93. It was actually, I guess we did 93 was the first year we remembered.
So I have a distinct memory of sitting before school. We had this giant blue couch.
Watching Xena Warrior Princess. Oh, wait, that was me.
We had this giant blue couch, and I might have like, I think I woke up early and like went to go sleep on the couch, and I was eating Chex on the couch. Or no, sorry. Crispix. Is that what they were called?
Crispix were the grocer Chex.
That's a thing.
I was eating Crispix because I was like, you know what? I need to slim down. I'm in eighth grade now. I have to stop eating sugary cereal.
Were you on the Special K diet?
When I'm on stage as
a comedian.
I think
that was that time too.
You know, comedians have to be physically fit. And I remember eating a bowl of Crispix, watching music videos, and specifically watching the Puff Daddy, Jimmy Page, Godzilla video. It's like Puff Daddy and some fucking old guy. Never heard of it. I was like, somebody here has star power and I don't even know. And then changing that channel and watching SportsCenter in that morning, because I would always change away when they would do the hockey highlights because I didn't care about hockey at all, which, spoiler alert, still don't care about hockey at all. And so you go back and forth between MTV, which would just play videos in the morning in 1998. Granted, it was 40 years ago. But SportsCenter anchors, it was like, this wasn't the peak of SportsCenter, but this was the Rich Eisen, Stuart Scott peak.
Correct. A great era. Kilbourne had already left at that point, right? He was already doing The Daily Show.
Yeah, Kilbourne was definitely gone.
The original Daily Show.
But like SportsCenter anchors for us, those are like people we grew up with.
Oh, I mean, we would just rewatch those hour after hour in the morning during the summer.
I was watching Rich Marriott and only Rich Marriott, which hasn't changed.
You weren't even watching Jeff Renner?
No.
Just only Rich Marriott? I guess he was on in the morning.
He may have been. I didn't care.
I didn't know how you felt about Rich Marriott.
You don't?
No, I had no idea.
Oh, I thought everyone knew.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
just
a thing.
Cool it.
Friend of the pod, Rich Marriott.
Hashtag Rich Marriott.
I want to look up what year Eisen left. Yeah, Rich Eisen was there through 2003. Stuart Scott was there. It's like, this was sort of like the second generation of big, probably for second generation for us.
Yes.
I think Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann were probably still there around 98 hosting like the flagship
SportsCenter. They were just about Levy at that point, or Olbermann was, I guess.
But it was like Stuart Scott was the voice of the youth, which we somehow were at the time.
Kenny Mayne was also coming in as that second generation, wasn't he?
And Kenny Mayne was there at the time. But it was like...
Federal Way's finest.
Those anchors mattered to us and were people who we like grew up with, right?
Yeah.
And watched constantly, every single morning, and usually every single night.
I also remember 98, like I think it was 97, 98, getting Sports Illustrated that year and then starting to get ESPN the magazine because I think it debuted in 98. That was like very important for me is I did not yet conceive of myself as a future sports journalist, but it was definitely like laying the groundwork for it at that point. You know, not like you already knew that you were going to be a comedian when you grew up.
That was the year we went to Ocean Shores. It was 98. And it was early ESPN, the magazine. It was when they did the ESPN Next issue.
Correct.
With Kobe Bryant and Jeff Gordon and...
No, not Jeff Gordon. Eric Lindros, Alex Rodriguez, and Cordell Stewart. So.
1998 in music.
I was busy reading 17 magazine. Sorry.
What was going on in 17 magazine?
Well, they were doing the quizzes in the back. Gotta do the quizzes.
98 in music. We'll see. We'll check in with our good friends at hiphopgoldenage.com in just a second.
Oh, of course we will.
These were bleak years.
Were they?
In a lot of ways. I mean, this was...
I had a CD changer, though. I remember. I got a Discman for the first time this year.
In 98?
Yeah.
Or this year.
No. No. Summer of 98. Because I remember going to my best friend's cabin and reading my 17 magazine, doing the quizzes in the back, and listening to my Discman.
And what CDs do you think you had for your Discman? Of the one or two CDs that you had and listened to over and over and over again?
I mean, I don't think I was necessarily up on it. I definitely had a Bone Thugs CD in there.
Okay. Just old. We've already talked about that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. And I had
Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And I had a Presidents of the United States of America CD.
Pusa, they announced that they were retiring from music in 1998.
And I got the CD.
And then they reunited in the year 2000.
And then played after Sonics games.
For another Casper Baby Pants.
Yeah.
It wasn't a long farewell for the Presidents of the United States of America.
I mean, we talked about this last week. Like, you mentioned the two formative CDs that you had. One of them being Big Willie Style.
Uh-huh.
The other, which did come out in 98.
Too.
Yes.
Oh,
which
yes.
is, like, in hindsight, maybe Jay-Z's worst album. Or his worst early album.
I remember writing down every single one of the lyrics to Can I Get A.
And that track, look... Still, oh my God. Wait, Rush Hour came out in 1998 also.
Oh,
and the
yes.
video, the Can I Get A Video with Rush Hour.
I still know every single lyric.
At the very end, you're like, who is this visionary?
named I was.
Ja Rule.
I know. Ja Rule.
And then he had Amazing. A whole holla that
is
came out.
Ja?
Ross Trent.
When then Holla Holla came out and you're just like,
it's murder!
You're like... there is a new savior for rap music, and thy name is Ja Rule. I was like, fuck this Jay-Z guy, average rapper. Ja Rule knows what's up. I told you 1998 was bleak. Total Request Live debuted in 1998 and helped usher in a lot of the stars that happened in like the late 90s, early 2000s were TRL stars, but it was like both the rap rock era and the boy band era definitely were like centered around TRL.
Wait, it was 98 and it was 99 the summer of...
Woodstock 99 was in 1999.
Oh, thanks.
Yes.
The Latin music influx, the Ricky Martin and...
I feel like that was a little bit later.
Okay,
Mark Anthony came around.
98, Rough Riders Anthem.
Wow. No, I'm not saying there weren't good songs, but I'm saying also I'm going to say in the mainstream, as if Rough Riders Anthem wasn't in the mainstream.
I don't know what you were listening to at your dances.
This was when Follow the Leader by Korn came out. This was when Limp Bizkit started being a thing. This was when the self-titled NSYNC record came out. Like, music was not a...
Hi, NSYNC was 98. I didn't realize that.
But then at the same time, you have The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Also, why are we talking about NSYNC as if it's a bad thing?
I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like as part of, well...
Have you ever done karaoke before, good sir?
Have you ever cried anyone a river?
I feel singled out. Just wait till 2001 when I become indie.
Oh, no.
I'm actually very excited to talk about the Vines. Well, I'm pretty sure going to be a bigger band than those Strokes or White Stripes.
Will ever last?
But this was a time period where it was like pop music was becoming more centralized in our lives. It wasn't just on the radio. It was everywhere.
Have you guys talked yet about the skit? And the importance of the skit?
I hate skits.
You hate the skits?
There's only one skit I've ever liked.
D's Nuts.
D's Nuts.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I remember thinking... Because, you know, I'd listen to the radio, and then I was getting these CDs in my cool new golden disc changer that had stickers all over. I was like, they're skits? This is a thing? Wow. And
paying for the songs. And I'm getting the skits
I'm
for
getting
free.
The skits! I thought it was a centralized part of music. It was amazing.
Really, the art of the skit has kind of been lost.
I miss the skit.
Thank God.
So many skits in
You're like, wow, too. There's 23 songs on this record. 16 songs and seven skits.
Skits. I really feel like I'm getting the setting here. I understand what's going on.
Oh, my God. There definitely are people who are like, I know from skits, like Paul Berman, head of Def Jam, left this week. And it's just like, you just know him from Eminem skits. And it's like, that's who he is. He's a character in the skits. And it's ridiculous. I think this was pre-Eminem, though. Yeah, the Slim Shady LP was 1999. So we'll get to that next year because it changed.
But it was pro-TQ. It was prime TQ era.
Wow, the West Side.
The West Side.
Can we talk about the I Know Jay remix of Time After Time that came out in 1998? Yeah. Speaking of songs that were played at every dance.
That's a good dance song.
Amazing dance song.
Oh, my God.
1998 was great. I don't know what you're talking about.
In 1998 was TQ. Oh,
I know. God. You know half that album is skits?
Have we talked about the Quad City DJs? That was our... Did we talk about that last time?
I think we've talked about the Quad City DJs, haven't we?
Okay, we've talked too much about the Quad City DJs.
I don't
think
anyone's talked about the West Side. Till I Die.
Have we talked about Da Dip?
We're too late for the dip.
I couldn't da dip. I had Sister Sarah with
Sister Sarah. There was no.
I honestly was thinking of it when you were telling that story.
Yeah, we tried. We couldn't.
Okay. So, from our good friends at hiphopgoldenage.com, as you recall, last year they switched to albums, not singles. And the top 40 hip hop albums of 1998 at number one.
Volume two?
No. That's not what
Hip Hop. That's my top album.
That's not what Hip Hop Golden Age is about. This is what Hip Hop Golden Age is about. Mos Def and Talib Kweli are Black Star.
Oh.
And they present.
Yep.
The Black Star album. It was like, I was saying music is bleak, and then there's Black Star.
There also was Memphis Bleak.
Oh, Memphis Bleak! I loved Memphis Bleek so much. I had a thing for Memphis Bleek.
Speaking of two great
he was
rappers
in so many skits.
Coming together and forming a group, him and I, Aquem and I, at number two, the best Outkast album came out in 1998. I distinctly remember being at, oh my God, we were in Burien across from St. Bernadette's Church, which we've talked about churches way too much. I guess
that's where the taco place is.
It's Fat Tuesday. We have to.
It's Fat Tuesday. There was a Jack in the Box there. Is there still a Jack in the Box there?
I don't think it's gone.
Yeah.
We were, I think Jan had taken, and maybe there was a Goodwill. Jan had taken us to
That one's still there. I've been to that.
A Goodwill.
It's good for thrifting.
And Rosa Parks
came on
the radio.
But now there's amazing tacos in that same complex.
Ooh, I haven't tried that.
Yeah.
Sign me up. Rosa Parks coming on the radio. And being like, I remember Eric Powers being like another group who were of African descent. And I was like,
Wait, what?
I swear to God, he said this.
I don't feel like you could remember verbatim from 22 years ago.
It was
ago.
Something like that. And it was just like, I was like, oh, interesting. I'm like, wow, how unique of them. As it just like, I had no idea anything that was going on. And then fucking Rosa Parks played. I was like, okay, all right, this is music.
I remember the first time I heard that album in full beyond Rosa Parks, like till the end, which do y'all remember the final track? I'm sure you do.
It's really deep in there. You have
Spodio to Dopalicious.
It's not the final
it
track.
It is the final track.
I swear to God, there's like three more tracks after that.
I don't think so.
98 degrees and rising.
But anyway.
It keeps going.
The first time I heard it, I was on my way to, can y'all guess where?
The mall.
The mall! Yeah. My friend's big brother was tasked with driving us to the mall.
Yeah.
And we decided that we had to bring her life-sized Barbie doll. Life-size. Like, this is like a mannequin situation. Naked.
Mm-hmm.
In the front seat. Just to piss her brother off. He had just gotten his license. He was so proud of himself. And he was trying to combat this situation of having these obnoxious young girls driving to the mall by blasting Equimini as loud as humanly possible to counteract it. I think we won, though. He had a naked Barbie doll in the front seat.
Wow. There were 1, 2, 3, 4 songs after Spodio and Dopalicious. It feels like it should be the last song in the album, and then it keeps going.
I don't know if I ever kept going.
It's 75 minutes skits? Long.
I don't think I kept going.
There's only one skit, the Nathaniel skit. Well, then there's Hold On, Be Strong at the beginning. And then,
that's not a skit.
Well, it's not a skit, but it's not like a full-on song. And then at the end of Rosa Parks on the record.
Keisha, cut that loud mess off. That one?
Well, no, that's in a song. But then Raekwon, shit's major right here.
Oh, shit's major. Yeah.
And then it goes into Scoot on the Barbie featuring Raekwon the Chef. And you're just like, you know what? It was worth it.
It was.
It was worth it sitting around for this skit.
Let me hear that skit.
But if they would have ended on Spodio to Dopalicious, you would have been like, great, that's the perfect record. And then it just kept going for four more songs.
I thought it did.
Because it was 1998. No one knew any better.
All right, what was the number three album?
At number three. I've totally lost my place. Black Star, Quemini. Moment of Truth by Gangstar, because this is hiphopgoldenage.com.
Did not hear that ever.
Number four. Capital Punishment by Big Pun.
There we go.
Boricua.
Which was not absorbed by some people here.
And at number five, a group called All Natural. No additives, no preservatives. Chicago underground hip-hop heavies. All Natural. Well.
But did they play that song about eating healthy?
Oh, God. Talk about it. Kevin's dead prez issues. It's Dark Out and Hell is Hot is at number nine. Hello Nasty by the Beastie Boys. Intergalactic definitely was like, that song was everywhere in 1998.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh man. We'll talk about Let's Get Free once.
That's all we got? Are you going to talk about Kevin's issues with eating healthy?
About how he hates dead
press. Eating healthy. I just don't think you need a whole song about it.
We've heard.
Year 2000, we'll talk about Let's Get Free. Well, anyway, some of us were listening to The Coup in the 90s. Not actually.
And yeah, you wish you were. Nope.
Oh my God. 1998.
So 1998.
These are always so much better than I think they're going to be. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Fantasy Genius. I'm sure that Kevin is going to delete that part.
Actually, it's going to make it much more difficult to delete it.
You know, I won't get on my soapbox here, but I'm just saying.
We don't talk about politics on the podcast. I figured you were going to delete it all. Thank you so much for joining us, Mrs. Fantasy Genius, to remember some years, 1998. Hope that you're able to join us again in the coming weeks.
I won't. But thank you for having me.
No thank you.
I'm about to get free now. No, thank you all for having me. Have a good evening. On to your sports.
But first we have to talk about
teriyaki,
which you didn't bring me because keto is a way of life.
We'll remember that when we remember 2020. let's remember some years, 2020. Oh, our search for Seattle's best teriyaki took us this week to First Hill.
Hello.
And Yoshino Teriyaki, which you will recall is the like template, I guess. I don't know if the right word is here for BB's Teriyaki, which was the first place we went to. The owner of BB's worked at Yoshino, and the Yoshino who operates it apparently also has been known to refer to himself as BB Daddy.
BB Daddy.
So hence the name BB's.
Okay, that actually kind of makes sense because I had completely forgotten that was the link, because the setup is kind of similar.
It is.
Where it's not like the teriyaki at Yoshino's Teriyaki is not like freshly made in the back or whatever. He scoops it out for you when you order it, right?
Yeah.
But like, that's where the similarities end, in my opinion.
I don't know if I go that far.
I mean, they're both teriyaki.
Also, both choice of yakisoba.
You got a choice of yakisoba?
Yeah, you didn't get offered that choice.
I saw that they had brown rice on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I was like, do you have brown rice? And Yoshino was like, no. and then he was like, we did, but we sold out. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. That sounds great.
So apparently, by all accounts, one of the most notable things about this is the interactions with the proprietor, who knows the regulars, definitely knows their orders, and seems to think that he knew our orders, even though we'd never been in there before.
Everybody's a regular with Yoshino. I guess so. He was like, thanks for coming in. Thanks for coming back or whatever. It was like as if I'd been there a bunch of times before and Yoshino like really appreciated that I was coming back. It's my first time ever being there.
He asked me, spicy chicken teriyaki? And that's what I wanted. Wow! That was perfect.
God, are you from the future, Yoshino? I watched The Matrix recently, as you can hear me reference, and Yoshino may be the Oracle.
Wow. According to the website, has been open for 21 years. Now, I don't know what year that is of, but at the very least.
The website's just like, we've been open for 21 years.
Since 1998.
Wow. Okay, so what did you think? I mean, okay, let's just, the experience, right, of going in there. It's like, I walk in, Yoshino's in the back, there's just him. He's like, I'll be with you in a minute. And I'm like, great. The ambiance is perfect. It is exactly what you want from a teriyaki restaurant. There's like random shit on the wall. You're like, great, sign me up. That's what I'm looking for. There are a lot of different options of food.
The pitchers of water in the fridge. Yeah, no, you probably didn't notice that because no. You didn't eat there.
But then so then I ordered the spicy chicken teriyaki. And I didn't even realize that he had sort of like three like pre-made things of teriyaki. There's more on the menu, which I assume that you would go in the back and make specifically, but it's like, I assume the chicken teriyaki, maybe there's like a beef teriyaki, and then the spicy chicken are pre-made, right? They're right there because people are ordering so much of it that he can just keep dishing it out and always be fresh. And so I ordered that and he's like, people love my spicy chicken. And I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted you to say. And then, so he does the bed of rice, the salad, right?
The cabbage salad, notably.
The salad's pretty good. Of all, you don't like it?
I find cabbage inedible.
I find you inedible. So
I mean, I would hope you do.
So it's the three different, the big tray in the front, and then the two in the back, and he'll do cabbage in the left side, more rice in the right side, and the big tray with rice, right? Puts a decent helping of chicken on top of it. But the interesting part about it is this isn't like a teriyaki sauce that's made with the chicken, right? Or like poured on. He has a big vat of teriyaki sauce that he scoops out and onto it. And I'm like, I see the first amount and I'm like, I'm going to need more teriyaki sauce.
See, I wish I had noticed that.
And I was just like, hey, can I have more teriyaki sauce? And then so he did another scoop because the first scoop doesn't seem like that much, right? And you're like, I need a lot of teriyaki sauce here. And then so I'm
you
like,
a third scoop?
No. Okay. I did two scoops.
Okay. But,
and so then I took it and I drove back to my office. It's like an 8-minute drive. By the time that I had reached my office and started eating this, the teriyaki sauce had just permeated all of the rice.
Oh.
Right? And so like every inch of rice was basically like teriyaki rice.
I'm so jealous.
It was the perfect amount. Why are you not good at this?
I don't like to talk to people.
Yoshino wanted to talk to you.
It's true. He really did.
He was happy that you came back for the first time ever. And it was just like the way that it's done. Because a lot of times you go to a teriyaki place and like there's teriyaki on it already. And then you like get a little tiny bullshit little cup of teriyaki. Right. And you're just like, this is not enough teriyaki.
There was a choice if you wanted the teriyaki sauce on the side as opposed to pour it on.
Yes.
But which could save a mess, I suppose, depending on, you know, your travel.
You
but
want it poured on.
You want it permeated.
And it's just the whole thing just like. By the time I got it and was eating it, was like, it's perfectly done, right? Like,
so do you think this is the best teriyaki we've had so far?
By far, the best teriyaki we've had. Wow. It was like the spice was the right amount of spice; it wasn't too much, and it was just like it's traditional teriyaki, but it's so well done and it's spicy, and the rice was good. The sauce is like, when he was pouring it, I was like, wow, that's a pretty runny sauce. But it actually worked quite well because it's like it's runny at first and then it kind of thickens over time. And it's like it's a sweet sauce, but it's not too much. Just all of the ratios were exactly right. And, you know, like we talked about the location that had like onions in it. And it's just like, you don't need that bullshit, right?
I like the onions.
I'm fine with there being other stuff in it. I like the idea of expanding from it. But of a traditional teriyaki, this is easily the best traditional teriyaki we've had.
I'm not quite as high. Maybe because I didn't get the second scoop of teriyaki sauce.
Gotta go back.
Because that was one of my complaints.
Talk to Yoshino.
Not enough teriyaki sauce. I scored an 8 for chicken.
Okay.
An 8 for sauce, which, again, I think if I had the second scoop, would probably be a solid 9. At least an 8.5, but possibly a 9. A 4 for extras because of the fact that, like I said, I do not like it. Cabbage.
Did you get the yakisoba?
No, I went with the rice.
Okay.
And then a 7 for value.
I didn't even know how much it was. Seemed like it was about right, though.
Everything's about the same price, as it turns out.
Basically, we don't even need value. All teriyaki's about the same price.
Yeah.
Just flavor-wise to me, this was like the flavor, the experience, the way that like I didn't have to work to make, aside from saying, can you do another pour of teriyaki sauce, which was very little work. I didn't have to work to make it like good. And a lot of times, like the Miyako teriyaki, which I'm sadly kind of down on now, it's like, if I get an extra cup of teriyaki, I need to, like, mix it all around. But the way that he pours it, it's just like, it ends up with the perfect glaze for the rice. And it's like, every bite was perfect, honestly. There was no bite where I was like, well, this bite's worse than the other bite. It was just like, this was the perfect teriyaki experience.
So I would say I didn't like it quite as much as Ichiro of the locations we've reviewed thus far. But still a very good teriyaki spot. At the very least, a good neighborhood teriyaki spot.
I think this transcends neighborhood teriyaki.
You would travel for this?
Absolutely, I would.
The 10 minutes from your office?
I mean, I would be willing to do that versus it's 10 minutes from my office to go to Magnolia, and it's 10 minutes from my office to go to
First Hill.
And I would much rather travel those 10 minutes to go to First Hill than go to Magnolia. I don't know, and this is the question that we really need to ask ourselves, is would I travel from my house in Fairwood, Washington to go there, which is like, I don't know about that, but so far, if I can travel 10 minutes out of my way to go get this teriyaki, I will do that.
All right, well, our shirts will continue next week. I have already been to our next location. Teriyaki Madness in Capitol Hill.
Madness?
I went there on Saturday because Yoshino was closed Saturday afternoon when I was trying to go. So I went there for lunch on Monday.
Was it supposed to be closed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they close early on Saturdays.
It wasn't just randomly closed? Because no. That would have added to the experience.
No. Would have been very authentic, yes. I agree. So we'll check back in next week on our search for Seattle's best teriyaki. But now it's time for the Coach's Corner, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza.
Because Pagliacci's season is winding down. So are we.
Pagliacci's season is not winding down. They've just rolled out new seasonals.
Oh, really? What'd they roll out?
There's a broccolini, I think.
The previous season was winding down.
That's true. I guess that's true. There's a broccolini. And what was the other one? The other one looked really good as well. But I don't remember off the top of my head what it was. This is where you fill. So we didn't have a game last week.
A bye week for the Sun Devils.
A hard-earned bye week.
And it should recover from injuries.
Oh, salami picante. Rosmarino salami with sweet and spicy pepperdew peppers and fresh rosemary over a crushed tomato and fresh mozzarella base. It looks quite delicious.
I'm going to go ahead and say sign me up for that one.
Yeah, yeah.
That looks really good.
Also, the gelato of the season.
Oh, they do seasonal gelatos?
Confetti.
Oh, wow. I like that.
Yeah.
So it was last practice of the season. I'm actually missing the last game of the season. Didn't have the heart to tell the kids because they'd be devastated. And
they definitely can tell us apart. Like, no, no. But no, no, like, the other guy with the beard.
Much like Mina Kimes hearing our voices.
That's a real callback. That's back to the first 100 episodes.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
That was in the first 100?
Yeah, that was the first time she was on.
Back in 1998. Felt like we should have some fun at practice, right?
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense, right? Last practice of the season.
I didn't think so because of the fact that it turned out that the week-long break for midwinter break, everyone had forgotten the rules.
You know, you care more about... you're coaching the team on Saturday. I'm never coaching this team again, so I'm basically retired from coaching. But it was like... I just want to have fun. You know, a parent came over after and shook my hand and thanked me for making practice fun. So...
The weird thing is, like, in games, I'm much more about, hey, let's have some fun out here, and you're very competitive. But in practice, it's like, you know, we should maybe try to, like, follow the rules a little bit just in case Gina is refereeing on Saturday.
It is, like, in games, I'm consumed by darkness. But my favorite part about practice, so we have a normal, like, good competitive practice. I brought a little speaker, found, a, like, clean rap hits, because I was thinking, and I was like, I can't, just in case there's a parent who just doesn't want their children hearing whatever swearing is happening, content or whatever is happening in rap music. I'm like, I need to find clean rap hits. Found clean rap hits of the 90s through today playlist where it's like, sign me up. You've got California Love is the first track that played and they're also playing The Baby. I'm just like, this is all I need.
How was the song that had the extended silence? I can't remember it now, but it's like back-to-back swear words.
There's a song with, you turn it off during Juicy.
Well, just
right at Blow Up Like the World Trade.
That is true. You rapped along to that after I turned it off. You were trying to say something to the kids. That's why I turned it on.
You know, I just really hate when you respect my coaching authority.
You really do. You really
but
do.
But so we were having like a good time at practice, right? There was like a revelry that was going on.
Yeah.
But my favorite part, it was like everything you could possibly want. Katie was there yelling at her child after she got injured. You know, multiple of Katie's children were getting injured. Katie's child got injured. Sharon's child got injured. It was like, this is great. But my favorite part that happened the entire practice was after when there was some sort of Boy Scout or Cub Scout or some shit meeting that was ending. And those kids came and stood in the doorway looking in. And it's like, y'all fucked up by doing the Boy Scouts instead of playing basketball, kids. Because you could be in here right now listening.
You're capable of doing both.
Listening to Regulators with us while we're playing basketball. Have fun, Weebelos.
Wow. I haven't heard a Weebelos reference in a long time. So yeah, so the final game is on Saturday. The famous cousin Katie and I will be coaching the team.
Apparently. And Mrs. Fantasy Genius asked me if I wanted to coach baseball this year coming up. And I was like the fucking javelina in that video, running away from coaching baseball.
Baseball is much more tedious.
I was like, I am not about to have baseball dads, right? Deal with me. I was like, basketball is enough. I feel confident enough in my ability to understand the sport and play the sport enough. But I was like, baseball, I want nothing to do with.
Well, should we get into sports, Seattle sports? Let's start off with the Sounders, who began their season with a 2-2 draw last Thursday.
What is with this tortoise?
At CD. It's Mikhail. No, it's tortoise. At CD Olympia in the first leg of the CONCACAF Champions League round of 16. The Sounders took a 2-0 lead early in the second half in San Pedro Sula, Honduras, behind goals from Joao Paulo making his Sounders debut and Jordan Morris, a pair of goals from Justin Arboleda equalized the score in the 79th minute, and the team settled for a draw, but a pair of road goals for the Sounders, valuable to have because that is the tiebreaker in CONCACAF Champions League play. So if it's a 1-1 or 0-0 draw in leg two Thursday at CenturyLink Field, the Sounders will advance. The Sounders played this match without Nico Ladero, who sat out due to the hamstring injury that spotted him recently, and Gustav Svensson with a calf injury, as well as Harry Shipp, who was dealing with the flu. Status of Ladero and Svensson still uncertain for this Thursday. Shipp expected to be back. On the Olympia side, they're dealing with some absences. Their captain, Iver Alvarado, suffered an ACL tear over the weekend in league play and will also be without another defender, Jonathan Paz, due to visa issues preventing him from making the trip.
Visa issues?
Yeah. I mean, happens. A busy week for the Sounders, who after playing this important game on Thursday in CONCACAF Champions League play, on Sunday will open their MLS schedule against the Chicago Fire at noon on ESPN. They'll be raising the banner from last year.
My boss is going to the same wedding as me in Bellingham the night before. And he's like, he has to rush back for the Sounders game. I was like, he is going to be haggard. There's a keg of Tropic Haze.
Yeah, that's gonna be a long day for him.
But before then, the match against Olympia, I watched most of this match.
Did you?
And
I was streaming it while I was at the Husky game, as I posted on Instagram.
I watched a good chunk of it. I actually missed both of the goals because I think we were battling, but because of Star Wars.
Of course.
It felt like the Sounders were a little bit more in mid-season form than I was anticipating.
Compared to some of the other MLS sides so far in CONCACAF Champions League, a strong result, like LAFC got beat 2-0 on the road in their matchup. They really struggled. There were a couple of MLS sides that got the road victory, but a good result, all things considered. And, you know, they weren't, like, lucky to be up 2-0. They were enjoying the better of the play for much of this match.
I mean, I was surprised that they ended up with a draw.
And then just kind of couldn't withstand the offensive onslaught. And one thing you did see was, like, it's a back line that hasn't played together very much. You know, Yaimer Gomez Andrade was making his first appearance for the Sounders at center back, and just a little bit of confusion that helped lead to some of the goals, the two goals. So hopefully that will clear up with more time together.
But it does feel, I mean, as the Sounders transition to MLS play, feels like the midfield and the attacking third, they're going to be really strong this year.
Assuming everyone stays healthy, I think so.
And also getting a chance in the Champions League to get Danny Leyva involved.
Yeah, that was cool.
At 16 years old?
I think so.
Pretty insane.
Yeah.
To me, like, you're playing in Honduras right now, right? Like, it's kind of an insane thing to think about. So it was kind of awesome to have him get an opportunity to go into a, you know, like a more hostile environment than he'll probably play in a lot of the MLS stadiums.
Yeah, I think so.
As a really young player. So I thought this was, and I assume that the Sounders will probably win this series.
They're comfortable favorites at this point. They're not a lock by any stretch of the imagination, but comfortably favored. Now, the disappointing thing is then you only have 2 days in between matches before you host Chicago in the MLS opener. The Fire last season finished just outside the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference with 42 points. And then the organization has undergone, like, other than basically like the name of the team, and I think they kept the same GM. Other than that, everything else has changed. They are moving to Soldier Field this year. After previously playing out in the suburbs and not drawing
deep
particularly
in the verbs,
well.
Right?
Yeah.
Who's they had that star, that like big dude?
They definitely had a star player.
I can't remember what his name is.
But they have a new owner who is moving the team to Soldier Field. They have a new manager. They added multiple designated players this offseason.
Really?
And they look like they should be a pretty formidable foe in MLS going forward. It'll be interesting to see how together they are. But the 538 Soccer Power Index has the Fire rated slightly better than the Sounders going into the season.
Really?
A very heavy Eastern feel to the SPI leaderboard, with only two Western Conference teams, the two LA teams, among the top eight teams
the
here.
Defending champions, Sounders are really low.
Well, they weren't very high last year. their advanced stats were not good when they won.
They kind of just got lucky to win one match and then host the final at home.
It worked out very well. I mean, I think they were probably a little bit better than they're rated.
Well, I think the cool thing about this for Chicago is that, and who's the new ownership group? Is anybody that we know?
No, I don't think you would know that. I don't remember who it was.
Having that happen at an established club in a major American city, I think, is an important thing. Yeah. This isn't like fucking Cincinnati, right? Like, this isn't...
This should be a flagship MLS squad, yes. Like right along the side of the New York teams and the LA teams. They also hired one of my good friends away from the Sounders to
Todd
to work, run their game operations.
So you know they'll have grade A game ops.
Yeah.
But the most important thing about it is, like, when this happens to a team like the Chicago Fire, it makes the MLS feel like less of a house of cards.
Agreed.
So it's like having these teams.
Now, maybe when they don't add two expansion franchises a season, it will feel less like a house of cards.
Look, once they get to 53 teams, I feel like the MLS will be done then. But Rochester just needs a team.
Wow. I mean, Rochester actually very strong support for soccer there.
Wait, actually?
Yeah. They've got a very strong USL team or whatever league they're in at this point.
Look, you just don't keep Taos, New Mexico out of the MLS. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay.
You went further. Also on Tuesday, Kim Ki-hee announced on Instagram that he's signed with Korean League side Ulsan Hyundai. Sounders signed last week.
Hyundai. Like, it's a very popular brand.
Yeah.
Are you just learning that now?
No, I looked it up earlier. It's a sad thing. But then I was going through it too quickly.
Red Bull.
We already knew he was almost certainly not going to be back after the Sounders signed Yarmar Gomez-Andre to replace him at center back. The Sounders last week signed MLS veteran Miguel Ibarra, most recently of Minnesota United, to add depth in the midfield.
All right.
Reign FC announced their 2020 NWSL schedule. They will open on Saturday, April 18th at the Washington Spirit. The home opener at Cheney Field in Tacoma is Sunday, May 3rd, against the Chicago Red Stars. So got a little less than 2 months here till the beginning of the NWSL season. Seattle Storm with a couple of roster moves on Monday. They traded veteran forward Kalina Mosqueda-Lewis to Connecticut, where she played at UConn, of course, for a 2021 second-round pick, and then used the cap space that deal freed up to sign veteran guard Epiphany Prince. A two-time All-Star, well with the Chicago Sky, Prince started a majority of her games as recently as 2018 for the New York Liberty, but spent most of last season out of the WNBA before being signed by Las Vegas late in the season, played 5 minutes in the playoffs for the Aces. At this stage of her career, probably mostly insurance in case the Storm have injuries at point guard. Speaking of which, Sue Bird officially re-signed on Tuesday. There was never any doubt that she was going to be back with the Storm. Brianna Stewart has also re-signed on a multi-year deal. So the only real roster question left is whether the Storm will bring over their 2019 first-round pick, Ezzy Megbegor, who's continuing to develop well, playing in her native Australia. They only have one roster spot at this point left. So it would be between Migdegor and whoever they draft in the first round this season. So Storm roster taking shape, still, you know, got a month, a little over a month until the WNBA draft. We turn our attention to UW Sports. This Husky softball team went 5-0 at the Mary Nutter Classic. Won the Mary Nutter Classic, although UCLA also went undefeated. Highlighted by a 12-2 destruction of number 3 Oklahoma on Saturday, featuring home runs by Jadlin Elchin, Bailey Klinger, and Ari Quinones. Freshman Kelly Lynch won games both Friday against Wisconsin and Sunday against number 25
Kelly
Northwestern.
Kelly Lynch is something to reckon
with. Walk-off home runs. She now leads the team with 5 home runs. The Huskies again played without shortstop Sis Bates, who you'll recall was in concussion protocol. Huskies now headed to Fullerton for the Judy Garman Classic, where they'll face number 4 LSU and number 3 Texas on Friday, and number 11 Michigan on Sunday, as well as Fresno State and Cal State Fullerton.
They play a freaking gauntlet.
I mean, like, if you want your teams to play serious non-conference schedules, college softball is really for you.
It's awesome.
They're going to have played the number 3 team in the country in consecutive weeks.
Husky football also played in the Judy Garman Classic this year.
Oh, no. I'm glad they got that
Boise State in it. Having Kelly Lynch as a freshman and dominating in this way is... We weren't discouraged by any news around Husky softball, but...
No, I mean, they were already really amazing, but they've never had a freshman quite like this. I mean, I can't remember what Daniel Laurie was like as a freshman. I feel like it wasn't until she was a sophomore that they won the national championship and we, like, really knew who she was. But, yeah.
I mean, the Huskies have to be up there with maybe the best college softball program in the country.
I mean, UCLA certainly is staking a strong case to that.
It's one or two. And then also winning these games without the veteran presence of Sis Bates.
Yeah, that's very encouraging to me.
Man.
So feel good about things. UCLA actually got more votes as number 1 after they also went undisputed at the...
So the Huskies are number 2?
Mary Nutter Classic, yes.
Man, that's going to be a showdown when they play each other.
It sure will. UW women's basketball... They got the better of UCLA. First off, they beat USC 75-66 on Friday to snap a losing streak. And then Sunday took down number 8 UCLA, a game that was very reminiscent of when the UW men's basketball team beat UCLA on senior day in 2001 at the end of my freshman season. We're not quite there.
That's the game that we went to, right?
Yes, we sat at the very top of Heck Ed.
I remember being in there and seeing the sun come in through the, like, windows that they have at the very top, and they had not Casey Jacobson, he went to Stanford, right?
Well, they had Earl Watson. Was
who's they had some white guard though, right? 3-point shooting guard.
Oh, is Capono still there?
Oh, Jason Capono. Oh man,
I mean, they had a lot of talent on that UCLA team. They were like 13-2 or 14-3 in conference play going into that game, I think. A team that reached the Sweet 16 fun. That year. Yeah, it was one. I mean, Michael Johnson and Brian Brown in their senior day, both these days, both had big games. In this game, senior Gigi Garcia, who had never been able to take the court for the Huskies due to a series of ACL injuries dating back to her high school career, was announced as a starter, was out there for the jump ball before being taken out of the game. Huskies never trailed off that emotional high and withstood a late UCLA run and then managed to bring her back in the final seconds to throw the inbounds pass at the end of the game. It was the first win over a top 10 opponent for the Huskies since 2017.
There we go.
Back in the Kelsey Plum era. The road gets much more difficult for the Huskies this weekend after that exciting weekend at home as they travel down south to face number 17 Oregon State on Friday, and then Sunday number 3 Oregon. It's the only meetings this season for the Huskies with the Oregon schools. Oregon State has dropped 4 of the last 5 to slip to 8-8 in Pac-12 play, 6th in the standings, but they're still 17th in the country because the Pac-12 is just that good at women's basketball and softball. Oregon beat number 4 Stanford on Monday in a showdown to clinch at least a share of the conference title at 15-1. Their lone losses this season coming at Arizona State and to Louisville on a neutral site. And here's Sabrina Ionescu's Monday.
Wow.
She spoke at the memorial service for Kobe Bryant.
That's insane.
Kobe and John
As
Bryant.
A college player.
Yeah.
Wow.
At the Staples Center. Flew back to the Bay Area for the game. She had her 26th career double-double with 21 points, 12 rebounds. Yeah, I said that, didn't I?
Oh, you said double-double.
21 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists, and in the process became the first Division I player, men's or women's, with at least 2,000 career points, 1,000 career rebounds, and 1,000 career assists.
So she's kind of being anointed as like...
No.
She's the
new Kelsey Plum.
But she's like the Zion of women's college basketball.
I mean, obviously it's different because she's a four-year player.
Or is she... I mean... What is the scale here? Like, what are we talking? Is this LeBron James level? Like, is she going to come into the WNBA next year? Clear number one pick, superstar from the first second.
Probably.
I mean, when you're speaking at Kobe Bryant's memorial,
I mean, that doesn't necessarily translate to WNBA.
But still, it's like
poised beyond her years, without question.
And I'm assuming she had a relationship with Gianna.
Yeah. Yeah, a very emotional event. It was a tough watch, but a very good watch, the memorial service on Monday. Yeah, I mean, Ionescu could have been the number one pick in the draft last year if she had been willing to.
Has anybody ever left early?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jewel Lloyd did when the Storm took her number one, and then actually Ionescu's
Jewel
teammate.
Jewel Lloyd is the number one pick in the draft.
She was. Mosqueda Lewis was the third pick that year. Ionescu's teammate, Satu Sabali, announced on Monday, I guess, leading into this game, that she is going to forego her senior season and go into the draft. So it would be good news for the Huskies if Oregon didn't have the best recruiting class in the country coming in, like four McDonald's High School All-Americans. Ionescu almost went to UW.
They Wait,
were
really?
A finalist for her. How different would the last 4 years
Where is she from?
She is from the Bay Area, Walnut Creek, to be technical.
And just ended up at Oregon?
And not until like late in the summer. It was a very, very strange recruiting process.
Was she like the number one?
I don't know if she was the number one. I mean, we knew she was a big deal. We didn't necessarily know she was this good.
And that was back when Husky women's basketball was good.
She would have been there for Kelsey Plum's senior season.
Cool.
Yeah. The last 4 years would have been very different. Or three at least. UW men's basketball, a 72-64 loss Thursday at Stanford, dropped them to 2-12.
Not at Stanford.
Or to Stanford.
That was at home.
Did I say at Stanford?
Yeah, you said at Stanford, but it was in...
I mean, I know. I was there. Dropped them to 2-12 in conference play before on Saturday in a game I did not attend.
Thank
alas.
God.
They broke the losing streak with an 87-52 win over Cal. With that 35-point margin of victory, the Huskies now plus 3 in Pac-12 play for the season while going 3-12.
That game on Thursday, I was with Baby Fantasy Genius, and I was like, let's just watch anything else. I was like, I think that there's a Pistons game on. You know, it was like, there's nothing that I want to watch less in the entire world.
I mean, it was just the exact same script as all these other games, where they played reasonably well, were right in the game, and then went through a stretch in the second half where they could not score.
I mean, it was nice having the Sounders match on.
The Huskies on Saturday shot 11 of 22 on threes, getting three apiece from Marcus Sohonis and Hamir Wright, while Cal went 2 of 13 beyond the arc and made 27% of their two-pointers. It is tied with a Duke game on a neutral site for the largest margin of defeat this season for the Bears. And yet the Huskies would still need to win out to avoid at least sharing the Pac-12 cellar, which, quite frankly, they're not going to do.
I honestly feel bad for Isaiah Stewart and Mike Hopkins. Like,
I mean, Stewart in particular, because Mike Hopkins is going to get other seasons. This is the only one Isaiah Stewart in all likelihood will have at college.
Well, Isaiah Stewart will be an NBA player.
Yeah.
I think he'll be fine. But like, this team just isn't that bad. That's the frustrating thing about it.
They're 56th in KenPom.
It's like, they should be on the bubble for the NCAA tournament.
UCLA has somehow ended up on the bubble. They've ridden that 1-2 point win over the Huskies in the Pac-12 opener.
And they're not just 56 in KenPom because of the early season. Like, they weren't that good at the beginning of the season.
They've outscored opponents in Pac-12 play. They have now dropped one spot to 57th.
But it's just like they have been so incredibly unlucky during Pac-12 play. Which I don't want to completely like separate from the play on the field, on the court, right? Like,
you don't want to completely separate from Quad A Green's ineligibility.
That's obviously there. I think there's a lot of randomness at bay here.
They are in the Ken Pomeroy, KenPom.com luck measure now, 353rd out of 353 teams.
That's insane, right?
Yeah.
To be sitting at 353rd. I think, but I'm saying some of it has to do with Kwadi Green not being there and helping them sort of smooth over these rough patches, facilitate at the end of games. You know, like, they're relying on pretty unproven players at a lot of important positions. And on it, like, honestly, the offensive inability of Jaden McDaniels is something that I don't think we could have quite, and maybe you did, maybe there's a podcast from like a year ago where you're like, but like, I think he's been worse offensively, and his decision-making offensively has been worse than we could have anticipated. I think the growth of Naz Carter was not what we expected. But like, in the end, this team is not as bad as they look. They're a 500 Pac-12 team and a pretty good Pac-12 season, and they should be there, maybe on the outside looking in, but like, they should be on the bubble.
I mean, here's the other thing is, like, you compare this. Last year, they were 9 spots higher
in Ken Pom
and were a 9 seed and won a game in the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, it's a weird season. It's a small sample size, the college basketball season, pretty much by definition. Senior Day festivities on tap for the Huskies this Friday as they host...
Friday?
Yeah, Friday night game as they host rivals Washington State. Sam Timmons, the only scholarship senior on the roster, but assuredly, of course, the last home game for Jaden McDaniels and Isaiah Stewart before they head off to the NBA. Timmons has played well lately. He got the start versus Stanford due to Hamir Wright's illness. He had totaled just 5 points in conference play before scoring 13 last weekend in the 2 games on 5 of 8 shooting. And Quidia's 4th career 3-pointer also totaled 11 rebounds and had a behind-the-back assist versus Stanford. Fans were loving it.
It's a little weird that Sam Timmons hasn't played more this year.
I mean, he's a center, and so is Isaiah Stewart, although they're playing those two guys together a bit now. So
might have been worth trying earlier.
I suppose it couldn't have hurt. Wazoo is coming off a sweep at the hands of the Bay Area schools and has lost 4 in a row since beating the Huskies to move to 5-6 in conference play. They are getting outscored by 9 points per 100 possessions against Pac-12 opponents, and yet they have 2 more conference wins than the Huskies. They rank 11th in the conference in offensive rating and 10th in defensive rating and have 5 losses in conference play by at least 17 points. The Huskies have none by more than 14. Besides 3-point shooting, they used offensive rebounding, getting 7 by senior Jeff Pollard and 24 free throws, including 10 of 10 from Cleveland High product CJ Ellaby, to beat the Huskies in Pullman. So a very winnable game for the Huskies.
And who do they have in the... There's this, and then there's one more weekend?
There is one more weekend where they will be heading out on the road to take on the Arizona schools.
Would it shock you if the Huskies went on like a little bit of a run in the Pac-12 tournament?
Not terribly. I mean, one of the things Ken Pomeroy tweeted about that plus point differential in conference play is to John Gassaway. It's like a very notable college basketball analytics thing. But Ken mentioned that there's a reasonable possibility that the Huskies will be favored in the first round as a 12 seed facing a 5, which would take place if UCLA drops to the 5th spot. They're currently a half game ahead of Arizona. Right, they're actually in a 3-way tie for 2nd, but a half game ahead of Arizona, who's in 5th right now. UCLA, despite, like I said, being on the bubble, currently ranks 84th in KenPom. So the Huskies would be favored if those two teams played as the 5-12 matchup.
And they lost the one ridiculous game.
Yeah. The Jake Kyler game. Seattle Seahawks updates from the NFL Draft Combine, where both John Schneider and Pete Carroll talked to media on Tuesday. The Seahawks expect Chris Carson to be ready for Week 1, but Rashad Penny will start training camp on the PUP list as he recovers from his ACL tear. Will Dissly, this was Achilles this time, right? On track for the start of the season. Some talk about him and Greg Olsen potentially playing together. Some 12 personnel, that's very exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Some positive talk about Ugo Amadi as the nickel corner. Seahawks said they want to add competition there, but that they feel comfortable with him.
Let it be known that my face is showing annoyance for them not playing Ugo Amadi at the nickel corner until week 17, 16.
Yeah, before that. It was like 14.
But it was not enough. Ugo Amadi should have been there much earlier in the season.
Also, I thought an interesting comment from John Schneider. We need to improve our pass rush. So, first off, that they have to try to find a way to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney.
First off, no shit.
Yes. That also true. So, you know, we still got a couple weeks left until free agency, but we're starting to move in that direction. And it looks like we're going to have a new CBA quite possibly by that point. It's being reported that it's going to be sent to the players for a vote on the new CBA.
And we think the players are going to approve this?
The media does seem stronger sourced on the ownership side, which has been more optimistic about this all along, but it now only needs a majority of players, and the players who have been upset about, in particular, the pay limitations around the 17th game, they are not a majority of players.
Because you think the players who are upset about it are players who would get paid more? It's a flat $250,000 the 17th game.
No, it's an extra game check, but it's capped at a certain amount.
Why do you cap it? That's what I don't understand. What is the logic?
And I don't know if anything changed. I didn't see any reporting on whether anything changed in the negotiating that these two sides did on Tuesday night.
Like, just make it an extra game check. That's it. Why is that hard?
It does seem like a simple fix.
And so, okay, like, yes, it's a minority of players, but also it's the most important players, basically, right?
Yes.
Just give them an extra game check.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. The other thing that I want to say is I am so highly pro one extra playoff game.
Oh, of course you are.
I'm just saying, like, the more opportunities to make the playoffs, the more teams that are in the playoffs, it's more fun. I don't care. Right? Like, when you're out, if you're a team...
No extra bye week in the regular season. They took that out.
That was kind of stupid. It's like, you don't need one more bye week to... So, what does that mean? They just start the season a week earlier?
I think they're starting the season the same time.
And the season goes on a week longer.
Correct.
Okay. All right, I'm fine with that. But it means that it's not just about the one extra team making the playoffs. It's about the three extra teams that are in it for longer, right? Like, it's about the hope that you keep for a longer period of time.
I see what you're saying, that more teams are in the mix.
So, like, if you're a fan of a team, and I'm always, like, we've been very lucky as fans of the Seahawks to have been in the playoffs most seasons for the last chunk of time, right? But, like, if we were a fan of a team that was on the bubble a lot of those years.
Like the 1990 Seahawks.
And you had a chance, you had a chance to sneak in or whatever. Playing a playoff game is still so much fun that I want more people to experience that. It doesn't devalue the playoff game, right? It's not like, well, oh, we're playing in this horseshit playoff game, 2 versus 7. Like, seven seeded teams are going to beat 2-seeded teams at various times,
yep.
Right? Like, it's not, this is football, and this is not a situation. It's not the 16-1 game in the NCAA tournament. Whereas, like, if you expand the NCAA tournament to whatever, to double the amount of teams, you'd all of a sudden have, like, you'd have pretty bad games.
Yeah, a lot of them.
But you're talking about one more team, and there is one more good team in each conference every year.
That team just may not necessarily be the 7th seed either.
But also, it takes away some of the, like, sneaking in as, like, a bad division winner. It doesn't take it away, but it's, like, it reduces how important that is. Like, you sneak in, it's the Philadelphia Eagles this year, right? It's, like, you're eliminating this season a much better Rams team than the Eagles were.
Yeah.
And the Eagles are in the playoffs and the Rams aren't because they just happen to be in the right division. And they're still going to host a playoff game or whatever. But, like, why wouldn't you want the best teams in the playoffs?
You would. I just don't know that this is necessarily the change that you would make to do that.
So you're saying you would eliminate division winners as making the playoffs to do that?
Probably.
Just add another team. I want all the teams to make the playoffs. Yeah.
Really excited for when that Cincinnati Bengals, who would it be, Baltimore? The Cincinnati Baltimore, the third matchup. It's so tough to beat a division rival three times.
Small hands. Don't worry, I'll never make it. But I'm saying
Joe Burrow wasn't walking through that door. Maybe Dalton was.
The NBA has it right with regards to the playoffs. Right? Like, more teams make the playoffs and whatever. The only thing that they have wrong is that there's super long series.
Yeah.
But it gives more teams a chance to be involved for a longer period of time. And that's all I care about.
The Seattle Dragons are all I care about. No, they're not. But a 24-12 loss Saturday to the Dallas Renegades.
How many teams make the playoffs in the XFL? Four. It has to be four.
I know what the playoff
fund is. It has to be four.
You would think so.
So 50% of the fucking league makes the playoffs, just like the NBA.
Another timely defensive performance by the Dragons defense, which intercepted Landry Jones twice, plus had a sack fumble and held him to 6.7 yards per attempt. But the offense was unable to get much of anything going after two early touchdown drives. They did not score after halftime, having led 12-6 at the break. Quarterback Brandon Silvers was much better, but still just 6.0 yards per attempt with an interception in this game. Austin Prohl back atop the receivers with 6 catches and 7 targets for 81 yards and a touchdown. Good news for the Dragons going forward offensively is left tackle Isaiah Battle, their first-round pick in the offensive line portion of the draft, was back at practice Tuesday after missing the first three
games.
There's
an offensive line portion of the draft?
Well, they split up all of the draft into like various different position groups and then rotated who had the top pick, basically.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's not the worst idea ever.
No. On Saturday, I mean, you're drafting all the players.
Yeah.
It's not like a rookie draft. On Saturday, the Dragons will travel to St. Louis to face the Battlehawks, who are coming off a blowout win of the New York Guardians in their home opener to move into a tie atop the Eastern Conference at 2-1. They just beat out the Dragons for the highest home attendance yet in XFL 2.0, with 29,554 fans watching the return of pro football to St. Louis. Quarterback Jordan Ta'amu is completing 76% of his passes this season for
Utah?
No, Ole Miss.
Oh.
76% of his passes for 7.5 yards per attempt. He's also a threat with his legs, having run for 123 yards the first three games, including 77 yards in their opening win versus Dallas. Running back Matt Jones leads the XFL
with
223 running yards. No.
Different Matt Jones.
Different Matt Jones. Florida. Rushing yards, but just 4.3 yards per carry. Kristen Michael.
Hello!
Our old friend, who did nothing wrong, had his first touchdown last week, but his average is just 2.3 yards per carry so far this season.
Nothing wrong week again on Seahawks Twitter.
Wow. Isn't that every week? So
I'm going to miss this again.
At some point, you're going to watch a Dragons
game. It's not even like I'm not trying to not watch these games. I would if I was home, but it's just like the whole calendar year is set up based around sports, right? And it's like, I have the entire fall where all I care about in the entire weekends is sports and going to pumpkin patches. And by the time you get to February, March, it's like, I've got other shit on the docket, right? XFL. Well,
apparently not coaching the basketball team.
Well, if these games were on Sundays, I'd watch.
Sometimes they do play on Sundays.
Why are they on Saturdays?
I don't know why that is.
Football should
be
played on Sundays. You're competing with nothing. College basketball is more likely to be played on Saturday than Sunday. That's the only thing you're competing with. Are they trying to avoid what the
Mavericks
Rockets on fucking...
All the games are nationally televised, so there's two windows on Saturday and two on Sunday.
Oh, I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I will at some point watch a Dragons game. But also, why do all the nicknames sound like pre-made, like Madden teams?
I mean, that's what they sound like.
That's just what it is.
That's what the names are. That's why the Madden does that.
Okay.
Just because it's realistic names. For
Madden is smarter than we are.
Yeah.
Madden is the Oracle.
Madden is the Oracle. On that note.
Well, good luck to you coaching a baby fantasy genius on Sunday. I've taught him recently to be pretty uncoachable, and just in the last couple of days. And I really hope you have fun in his last game. Oh, you're also going to be handing out trophies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm part of trophy culture now.
That'll be fun for you.
And a reminder, if you managed to make it this far, please send us your favorite highlights from the last 100 episodes.
If you've made it this far, you probably have highlights.
You probably do. You probably are Ben Bay if you've made it this far. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.